This is the Climate Report, episode 24. We're on WFMP FM Louisville, and I'm Hart Hagen, your host. Today's topic is NAFTA. Not only NAFTA, but World Trade Organization, trade agreements in general. Now, this is important stuff, and it does have a big impact on our lives. And it's important because we know, we Americans, we citizens know so little about it, and that has got to change. So on this episode, I'm going to give you a whole truckload of relevant facts that you may not have known about before, you may not have thought about before, and that's what we have to look forward to. So NAFTA has, and the China trade agreement has been in the news quite a bit. For one thing, President Trump was elected partly on the promise of bringing about some justice for American workers in relation to how American workers have to compete with workers in other countries. So in that regard, Trump is renegotiating NAFTA, and it's going to be called the USMCA if it passes, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or some are calling it NAFTA 2.0. So one thing I would like you to know about NAFTA in particular and trade agreements in general is that they have nothing to do with trade. Now that seems odd, but it wouldn't be the first time that a law or an agreement is different. You know, it's one thing on the surface and it's another thing in reality. In reality, NAFTA is not about, low tariffs or... It's not about trade. It's about one class of people extracting wealth from other classes of people. But first, NAFTA is a trade agreement. Trade agreements are under the WTO, the World Trade Organization. So the World Trade Organization is like the United Nations of trade. So one thing we might observe about international agreements or international relations is that Americans have mixed feelings about international trade agreements and international relations. Take the United Nations, for example. Some Americans think the United Nations is basically a good thing. I mean, the United Nations exists to prevent wars. The United Nations exists so we can use diplomacy and resolve agreements peacefully whenever possible. What could be wrong with that? Well, what some people don't like about that, especially those on the conservative end of the spectrum, so-called conservatives, what so-called conservatives don't like about the United Nations is that they think that it takes away our sovereignty. It takes away the right of the United States to act as a sovereign nation. Which is to say that people have different thoughts and feelings about the United Nations. Therefore, people are going to have different thoughts and feelings about the World Trade Organization. But if conservatives are concerned about losing some of our sovereignty to the United Nations, they should be beside themselves and throwing fits about how much of our sovereignty we're losing to the World Trade Organization. By the time we get to the end of this episode, you will know what I'm talking about. The World Trade Organization, at least with the United Nations, with respect to our relationship with the United Nations, at least we are still a sovereign nation. We don't lose our sovereignty to the United Nations. But we do, in fact, lose much of our sovereignty to the World Trade Organization, and we will see on this episode how that works. What puzzles me and concerns me is that in America you have conservatives and you have libertarians that want to hate the United Nations. But if you're a conservative and you hate the United Nations, but you don't hate the World Trade Organization, then you're simply uninformed or misguided. Because we as a nation and also our states and localities have forfeited much of our sovereignty to the World Trade Organization. The good news is that we can repeal these trade agreements at any time with a majority vote in Congress. So we're going to get to the specifics of how we are losing our sovereignty to the World Trade Organization and to NAFTA. But first, let's define three classes of people. Class A is the ownership class. Class A earn their money by owning. They earn money through dividends from stocks, interest from rents, from royalties, but they get most of their money from owning things, not primarily from their work. That doesn't mean they don't work, but most of the money they earn is from owning things. Class B is most people in our country and in the world. Class B get most of their money from earning it through wages, tips, fees, commissions, revenue from a small business, pensions, Social Security, but they get most of their money from earning it. And Class C is the group of people who don't have steady employment and are barely hanging on. They live in extreme poverty. They might be able to do day labor, but they are basically fundamentally destitute. And this constitutes hundreds of millions of people in the world, if not a billion or more people in the world. So the reason for going into this is to create a scheme or a framework for thinking about, you know, Class A is the ownership class. So NAFTA and the World Trade Organization are designed so that the ownership class can extract more from Group B and Group C. For example, since 1970, maybe 1965, 1970, wages in America have been flat. In other words, in real terms, the average wage earner and salary earner does not earn as much in real terms as their parents and grandparents did in 1970. That is not an accident. And it has come about through conscious and deliberate planning by Group A as they pursue their own material interest. For example, NAFTA has created a lot of unemployed or underemployed people in America as American workers have had to compete with Mexican workers. Also, Canadian workers have had to compete with Mexican workers. But Mexican workers are not better off either, because Mexican farmers and restaurants and small businesses have had to compete with huge multinational corporations. For example, Mexican restaurant owners have to compete with huge American restaurant corporations. Mexican farmers have to compete with huge American agribusiness corporations that are often heavily subsidized. When NAFTA was being deliberated on, when NAFTA was about to be passed in the early 90s, only three groups of people were opposed: Canadian workers, American workers, and Mexican workers. Those three groups of people were opposed to NAFTA, and yet it passed anyway, and those three groups of people are not as well off as they were before. They have lost jobs because of the way NAFTA works. It has nothing to do with free trade. It has everything to do with class warfare. For example, Mexico has not had strong labor unions ever. Any labor unions they've had have been intimidated, and there's been, you know, anti-labor violence in Mexico. So the oligarchs, the class A, the ownership class, knew that that American and Canadian workers would have to compete with Mexican workers, and that would be good not only because Mexican workers have to settle for lower wages, so Mexican workers typically might earn $3 an hour, whereas an American worker might own $25 an hour. And the oligarchs who crafted NAFTA knew that American companies could just move their manufacturing operations to the northern part of Mexico, and they would be better off, and American workers would be worse off. And this allows Class A, the ownership class, this allows them to have more, to extract more profits from their operations in a way that does not benefit the workers, American workers, in the case of an American company. So when they extract profits from their companies, where does it go? It goes to Wall Street. It has little or no impact on our local economies. Meanwhile, it's not good from an environmental standpoint either, because you can always take your manufacturing operations to a country that has little or nothing in the way of environmental standards. You can always take your manufacturing operations and your mining operations and your farming operations to a country that has no environmental standards, where you can just extract minerals from the earth without taking proper environmental precautions on that, where you can carry on the most ecologically devastating farming practices. All of that is just A-OK under NAFTA and other, trade agreements of the World Trade Organization. And that's another way in which Class A, the ownership class, pursues their interest at the expense of Class B and Class C, the earners and the very poor. Because it's the earners and the very poor who are going to be most exposed to toxins in the water, toxins in the air, toxins in the food. And somebody might say, well, how can you expect American companies to pay $25 an hour to their workers? And part of the answer is that $25 an hour reflects the true cost of operating in a country and in an environment where the environment is properly respected and properly cared for. There's a cost. You have to go out of your way to keep the air clean, the water clean, and the soil healthy, and make proper provisions for worker safety, proper provisions that say we are not going to have children working in factories. So $25 an hour to an American worker is a small price to pay if that means we're not going to have children working in factories in other countries, and we're not going to have factories that blatantly pollute the air, blatantly pollute the water, and blatantly destroy the soil, and carry on practices that are bad for people and the planet. So when you look at what NAFTA is really about, what the WTO is really about, what the America-China trade agreement is really about, it's really about giving corporations special rights to cross borders, irrespective of labor laws, environmental protections, health standards, child labor laws, clean air, clean water, endangered species. These are all the casualties of having trade agreements that give multinational corporations the right to exploit people the planet, the environment, etc. Now, back to the part where I was talking about how we lose our sovereignty. So conservatives and libertarians who are so uptight when we think about the United Nations and how we're losing our sovereignty to the United Nations. How about losing our sovereignty to multinational corporations and to the World Trade Organization? So one way, here's one of the main ways that happens is that the World Trade Organization agreement and NAFTA gives corporations the right to sue local, state, and federal governments. And here are some examples of that. So a corporation sued Japan because Japan had standards for pesticide residues in imported food. And the World Trade Organization ruled that Japan had to relax its standards related to pesticide residues in imported food. In other words, Japan no longer has the sovereign right to regulate the amount of pesticide residues in imported foods. Next example, Guatemala wanted to eliminate deceptive advertising related to baby formula. So medical and health professionals know that mother's milk is healthier for babies than baby formula, and that sometimes babies die as a result of having baby formula instead of mother's milk. So Guatemala wanted to eliminate deceptive advertising for baby formula. The World Trade Corporation, possibly Nestle, comes along and sues Guatemala in the trade court, and the trade court says, Guatemala, you can't have these rules related to deceptive advertising and baby formula. Therefore, Guatemala no longer has the sovereign right to regulate advertising related to baby formula, even though many babies die in impoverished countries as a result of having baby formula instead of mother's milk. Next example, the European Union wanted to have restrictions on hormone-ridden U.S. beef. So U.S. beef has a lot of hormones in it, especially human growth hormone. The EU, the European Union, wanted to regulate that. The world, of course, a corporation sues the European Union, and the World Trade Organization rules that it's an illegal restraint on trade, that the European Union does not have the sovereign right to regulate the amount of hormones in the beef they import. Next example, parts of the United States Clean Air Act have been eliminated because the U.S. has been sued in trade court. Next example, portions of the United States Endangered Species Act have been eliminated because corporations that catch shrimp. So the U.S. has laws that said your shrimp nets have to protect turtles. There are endangered species of turtles. If you have a shrimping operation, your shrimp nets have to protect turtles. So the U.S. gets hauled into trade court, and trade court says that you can't have shrimp. You can't prevent shrimp companies from using whatever nets they want. Next example relates to the neem tree in India, N-E-E-M tree, the neem tree in India. And this example relates to patents. And so now companies are allowed to patent nature. And this is a big deal. So the neem tree has been used for hundreds of years in India because it produces certain natural pesticides and it has certain medicinal qualities. A lot of Indian people farm, have farms where they raise neem trees. So an American company comes in and says, oh, we're going to patent the neem tree, or we're going to patent this or that substance that we get from the neem tree. And the ruling by the World Trade Court was that a pharmaceutical company that took out a certain patent, that pharmaceutical company has control over the marketing of neem tree products. Now, Indian farmers have been raising and harvesting neem trees for generations, even hundreds of years. Now, all of a sudden, a multinational corporation is able to patent neem tree products and prevent farmers from selling anything it can't prevent them from growing neem trees, but it can prevent Indian farmers from selling neem tree products. And we think India is poor because it's their fault. Don't even get me started. So sometimes the good guy wins. There was a small victory in relation to there's a small victory in favor of the Indian neem tree farmers, to the effect that the European Patent Office says we will not let the United States Department of Agriculture patent a fungicide. That's something that kills a fungus. We will not let American companies patent a fungicide derived from the neem tree. The European Union Trade Patent Office, the European Union Patent Office says that traditional knowledge of farmers is a right that takes precedence over false claims of corporations. We need more rulings like that. The traditional knowledge of farmers all over the world needs to be respected vis-a-vis these patent claims by corporations that are trying to patent nature. They're trying to patent aspects of nature, trying to patent the genes in this or that plant just because they've modified them slightly, and which in turn denies traditional farmers of the right to grow and sell a product. Along those lines, the World Trade Organization ruled that the U.S. corporation known as Rice Tech took out patents on a variety of basmati rice that had been grown for generations. In other words, the WT ruled that Rice Tech has a right to a patent on varieties of basmati rice, even though farmers have been growing basmati rice for generations. If this sounds outrageous, that's because it is. Don't even get me started on why and how this is allowed to occur, but it's partly because, remember Group A, the owner class? They're constantly working to advance their own material interests, and they own the media, and they prevent the media from carrying on investigations about what they are doing. The American public would be outraged by this subject matter that I'm talking to you about. The American public would be outraged by this if they knew about it, but they don't know about it because the media doesn't report on it, or when they do report on it, they just don't draw attention to it in proportion to the importance of the subject matter. Here's a good one. The WTO, the World Trade Organization, ruled that a Japanese company had rights in the entire world to grow and produce curry powder. So somehow a Japanese company patents curry powder, and they're the only ones in the entire world to grow and to be able to grow and produce curry powder. By the way, just to give credit where credit is due, I'm getting much of this specific list that I'm reading to you, I'm deriving it from a book by Michael Parenti called The Face of Empire, which I highly recommend. And in that book, Parenti quotes the Malaysian Prime Minister, who says, "We now have a situation where theft of genetic resources by Western biotech corporations enables them to make huge profits by producing patented genetic mutations of these same materials. Now here's the key. What depths have we sunk to, this is the, continuing to quote the Malaysian Prime Minister, what depths have we sunk to in the global marketplace where nature's gifts to the poor may not be protected, but their modifications become exclusive property of the rich? In other words, genetic material that is natural and then it's slightly modified through traditional practices, none of that is protected by the World Trade Organization or any other laws, but the World Trade Organization can come in and protect the patent of a company that has ever so slightly modified a product. Continuing on the list of pathetic and outrageous examples brought to you courtesy of NAFTA and the World Trade Organization, water resources are no longer a human right, but are being privatized and sold to companies like Nestle and Monsanto. In some cases, preventing local residents from using barrels to collect their own rainwater. This also is according to Michael Parenti in The Face of Empire. And Parenti cites some good sources for this. It's hard to believe, but it's true. He also says, the companies claim to own the water that comes from deep within the earth and from the rivers and streams and now from the heavens too. You didn't know it, but Nestle and Monsanto even own the water that comes from the heavens. Now, we've got less than a couple of minutes left, so let's draw some conclusions from this. One conclusion is that the government is not taking care of us, and big business is not taking care of us. The government wants us to trust them, but they are entirely, completely untrustworthy. Big business, big corporations want us to trust them, but they are entirely and completely untrustworthy. I'm not suggesting violent rebellion by any means. I'm not suggesting that we eliminate the government. That's careless and silly and stupid to think we can or should eliminate government, but we need to redirect government. How did we get in a situation where, and this has been going on for, I mean, NAFTA is 25 years old. How did we get into a situation where so few of us know that big corporations have taken away our sovereign right to enact health legislation, health regulations, safety regulations, labor regulations? This is all brought to us under the guise of free trade and free markets and freedom and capitalism, which makes everybody more prosperous. But they don't tell you about the environmental regulations that are nullified. They don't tell you about the health and safety regulations that are nullified. They don't tell you that the air we breathe is more toxic because we're not allowed. Even the regulations that are on the books are being nullified. We're going to continue this topic on the next episode. Thanks so much for joining me.